the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Mitt Webber on the board. S&P futures up 23, Dow futures up 1, Nasdaq futures up over 273, it's 2.5%. It's letting you know that no matter what happens, no matter who's president, no matter if we have a civil war, the big tech companies come out ahead. I'm not so sure that's where I like things to be, but that sure seems like that's where it is. Kevin, are you with us, bud?
Yeah, I am with you, and I we actually chatted last night, and I'll say the same thing now. When you talk about the tech companies, what you're really discussing is that I don't want to say it, that you know their products are still going to be the in-demand products, no matter who wins. People are still going to buy cell phones. People are still going to use social media. All of those will continue to be factors. So it doesn't really surprise me that they are fine, because if the market doesn't like uncertainty, there isn't any uncertainty around those kinds of businesses.
Well, it especially isn't when any upstart that may end up being some kind of a competitor, they immediately buy.
Yeah, although I will say, you know, Twitter's not going to buy Parler if that takes off, as an example, because of who owns Parler, there's just no way in hell they're going to sell it to Twitter.
Who owns Parler? Out of curiosity,
it's a group from the right, and it includes among others. I don't know if you know who Dan Bongino is, but he's a Fox News contributor and very hardcore right wing guy.
Right. So if you're from the right, and your thing is
Secret Service agent and cop and all that. So, but he's made a lot of money in media, and they started Parler as an alternative to Twitter. So I just can't imagine him selling out. You know, it would be the reverse of the question you got yesterday. The silly one about would you go for the business if you were selling it to a left wing dictatorship?
Well, people have done that.
Would they choose the money over a left wing dictatorship? So, you know, there you go.
Well, we had Lindbergh, we had Joe Kennedy, who thought that having one customer in the whole continent of Europe would be pretty cool to sell his scotch to. You're saying if you're from the right, and I know that's not what you're saying, but I'm going to give you some crap anyway, that if your stock is trading 10, and Apple, or not Apple, wouldn't necessarily be Microsoft or Google, puts in a bid for 50, that your shareholders, because they're from the right, will say no?
Of course not. I'm saying a lot of people would take the money, and that there other people are principled, but understanding the people behind that that one specific example, not a generalized example, in that one specific example, I don't think they would take money from Twitter.
From Jack,
I think their mission in life, more so than anything else, they're not professional investors. They're media creatures who want to build their own little media empire instead.
Understand. All I'm saying is that I have people that are close to me, you know, I might have heard a rumor, murmurs in the mist, whispers in the wind, as they say, maybe like involved in a marijuana business. And people want to be in it for the long haul, and then all of a sudden you go out and you get a whole bunch of investors, and your shares are worth 10, and somebody offers you 20, and pretty soon you're wondering if you have enough power to say no. If the other guys say, I'll just take my 20. I mean, once you start diversifying and getting angel investors and next people through, the angel investor group that I've seen, I mean, I'm not, the motivation you're talking about, matter of fact, I'm glad you brought it up, Kevin. We'll talk about the election in a second here, because everybody's probably had that up their eyeballs, you and I, probably, even though we disagree on most things, if we decide to put a business together, we want to do it for all the right reasons. We probably, since we're not, you know, 25 anymore, want to actually have a business that does more than just make money. That it probably does, like your guys used to work for, Better World Books. They used to contribute to stuff every time they sold a book. That sort of thing, some sort of a...
Sure,
you got to make money.
Part of the B Corporation movement, there's hundreds and hundreds of companies that do that.
That's right. And then, but then, if all of a sudden we're a slack short on cash, and we see an opportunity, now if we're Daddy Warbucks, we can do whatever we damn well please, hence the term private partnership, hence the term sole prop, right? I mean, if it's my hot dog stand, it's my hot dog stand. But as soon as I decide that I want 8 hot dog stands, and I run out and get angel investors, and those guys, they don't give a rat's ass about hot dogs, or how good they are, or whether they're there's no, whatever you want to call it, preservatives in the hot dogs. And all of a sudden you go out to these guys, you're constantly in a mode of giving up control as you gain
so
money.
Because the investment comes with a seat on the board, and enough investors means enough seats on the board, et cetera. I get that. Now, what I'm saying, though, is in the tech businesses, the financial model is a little different. In the era of cloud computing, you can do pay-as-you-go for expansion, so you don't need to sink nearly as much money in capital as you used to have to scale up. You can just scale incrementally and have that track with your business growth, and that has changed the game a lot in terms of, you know, how businesses go about growing, and it's kind of a significant shift in how you do it. Now, when you're talking about the hot dog stand, you need a place to, you know, you need a place, physical stuff. You need all of that kitchen equipment, all of that stuff that costs money. But to run a software-based business, an online business, you don't need that. You just need server capacity. And so you start out with very little. And then if you grow, you go back out to your cloud provider and you say, give me a little more. And they do, and you're matching, you're back in the business of, rather than having to take incremental steps that require a lot of capital expenditure, you're back in the business of matching revenue and expenses without having to worry about overreach. How's that?
Well, I think at some point you still need capital, whether it's for marketing or whether it's for something. Nobody gets huge without it.
Yeah, it's not no capital, it's just less capital.
Right. Okay. Well, you know, you don't need a building, yeah. But I'm saying Twitter's had how many different rounds of financing?
You don't need hardware of any kind. You know, whether it's it's a steam table or a server.
Amazon started out that way. Just, they were like eBay, selling stuff of other people's, just giving you the platform. They didn't need much in the way of capital. And all of a sudden, they want to become UPS. They want to become the distribution system. They want to become the world. They got, you know, they need more capital than God to do that. It's the direction of where you go, right?
Yeah.
All right, so
and
I'm looking at the...
That's why the people who are competing with them are big companies. At this point, you got to, you know, the competition has to happen when they're still small. Anyway, so, yes, you wanted to shift to something here.
Well,
what's
I mean...
going on in the world?
Well, we've got... I stayed up pretty late, but it was obviously not going to be a winner. And now it looks to me like I don't see how... unless Pennsylvania were to turn here, I don't see how... Biden wins, do you?
It probably. I think the status quo right now favors Trump, but it's not a done deal. The thing I heard this morning is that Arizona may have been called prematurely.
Well, according to Trump, they're all it's over.
No. It's not according to Trump. It was a news report.
well, the Fox was the one that called
it
originally.
Business networks. I don't remember if it was CNBC or Fox Business.
I was listening to CBS, and they were all they were cackling gleefully last night that Arizona was called by Fox, and all the Republicans were outraged.
Yeah, well, tough. So we don't have a winner, but we definitely have losers.
We always have losers.
I mean, think about it. First of all, you got the obvious one, the polling people. They have the president wrong. They have the Senate wrong. The Senate's not going to flip. They had the House wrong. The Republicans actually gained a few seats in the House, so they had that wrong. I mean, they're getting pretty good at being wrong. There are a handful that have some interesting polling techniques that tell them different, but they haven't had a lot of traction yet. It'll be interesting to see how that business shakes out. Loser number two, President Obama. Everywhere he campaigned for Biden, it hasn't gone well. He campaigned in Florida, he campaigned in Pennsylvania, he campaigned in Michigan, and that's been the case with him for a long time. That the only candidate that he only has ever done a great job campaigning for one candidate, and that's himself.
I don't know that I will push back some because it, 6 months ago. I read a couple of seemingly pretty good articles, of, you know, God knows. And they said even 6 months ago that, unlike most elections, there were really only 7% of the voters that hadn't made up their mind. And I don't care if Solomon drops down in Texas, you're not going to change people's mind at this point. I mean, there's just...
That's true, although you had plenty of pollsters out there saying Texas would be a heck of a lot closer than the... what am I looking at? Than the 8 points, and that there was actually a chance that Texas would flip, and it didn't. And then on top of that, Cornyn was in big trouble, and he wound up winning by 10 points. Also, Lindsey Graham. Remember, Lindsey Graham was going to lose. He 56-43. He won.
That's really a shame that he won.
You go all around on that. What's it say?
That's really a shame because I can't stand the man. But that's another story.
That's a different issue. But the point being that we're talking about the pollsters, and they had so many of these races wrong. It's looking good for John James in Michigan, who is the one candidate that really mattered to me this time, that I really wanted to affirmatively vote for him. And James is up 49-7 to 48-4 at this point, with more votes to count. But he may actually flip a seat away from the Democrats to the Republicans because he's running against the incumbent. So the pollsters and President Obama. But clearly the biggest loser of all in this whole campaign is Michael Bloomberg. He dropped $100 million into Florida, and not only did Trump win Florida when people didn't think he was gonna, but he actually won it by more than he did in 2016. In 2016 it was 49 to 47.8%, and about 113,000 vote difference versus Clinton. So far, right now, as it stands right now, it's 51.2 to 47.8 and about 317,000 votes. So good job with that $100 million, Michael Bloomberg, after spending, $1 billion on his own four-month campaign? Good job,
money,
Michael
money
Bloomberg.
Can't contradict.
I think we need to send him a trophy.
Well, I mean, I think he should have just run it as a third-party candidate and just done it. I think his personality, his idea, he doesn't really like the campaign, is a bad thing. He got himself up on a stage with about six other people, which he was not ready to do. But I mean, I look at what's going on here, and I mean, for most people, I get criticized constantly from defending Trump, some of Trump's decisions and his instinct, and the fact that he sometimes is an outsider, so he has sometimes a different view than the insiders, which I've always thought was somewhat of a positive. But contrasting that, the man's the most despicable human being that's ever walked in that town. and virtually every level. And he said he's doing it again last night. And why we are sentenced to another 4 years of this guy and couldn't put somebody up to roundly kick his ass, I have no idea. But somehow or other,
I mean, that
this is
really
not good.
Is an incredible commentary on the Democrats. I mean, how would you like to be sitting there, assuming that it really does go to Trump's direction, which I don't think it's a done deal yet, but assuming it does, you know, how much must it suck that the combination of your ideology and the leaders that you choose are so bad that the country chooses Donald Trump instead twice?
Well, he does have. I've talked to many Trumpers, and some of them, a lot of them just can't stand the direction the Democratic Party goes. And it's funny.
That's what I mean. It's your ideology. How much must that suck that your ideology is so repulsive to people that alternative is better for them?
Well, I have people, unfortunately, very close to me, called me yesterday, and they are at the situation, and I must say one's very close to me, and it's really, without being, you know, getting into any kind of an argument or whatever, I said you're like the mother who loves your son, and despite 4 DUIs and 5 armed robberies, it's always somebody else's fault. The people that are vote for Trump have, I mean, I'm going to say a lot of them, I'm not accusing everybody, have somehow bought into the idea that every single piece of bad things about him are caused by somebody else. They literally are the 5-year-old with their hands over their ears telling, you know, with their mom going, I can't hear you. The fact is, if you just look at what the guy says, the man should be in jail, for God's sake. Damn near. I mean, the Democrats, I think, are just about as bad. So, I mean, that's why I couldn't vote for either one.
Wait. Now, if you're worried about what Trump says, then don't go off saying comparably half-cocked things. In jail for what?
Well, I'm saying just in general, the incredible, say, if lying was a crime, he would be in jail. I'll rephrase.
Okay.
I mean, the man doesn't know the truth.
That's fine. That's fine. But it's not a crime, so he's not in jail.
Well, I mean, it's a crime for other people. In my business, if I lie to a client, I mean, I'm out of the business and I get fined. I mean, so people in my business have to be 10 times more truthful to people than the president. I mean, what has me all screwed up about this country.
If you want to start throwing politicians in jail for lying, I'm on board. I'm cool with that idea. But,
well, that's what,
you know,
well, that's what I don't get.
Have any politicians?
Well, that was at the. I was listening to some of the people, and I'm no fan of Jack and the rest of the clowns in that industry. I think they're crazier than God. But when a politician like a Ted Cruz has the nerve to grill some guy about retweeting the truth, a lie from somebody they don't even know, and if you started. Not letting politicians talk if they're lying or filtering what they say, we wouldn't have a politician left. I mean, what are we doing here?
How can a
politician
pollute the law if we can get it passed?
I mean, it's like a fish accusing somebody else of not being, they shouldn't be able to live underwater. I mean, what are we talking about?
Yeah. So we have that to deal with. But hey, you know what? We talked about this a little bit too. So offline, and I'll get into it online a little bit or on the air a little bit. And that is that I think the thing that people have a hard time understanding is why what the affinity for Trump is. And there's a good book that I would recommend, and it goes back a ways. It's called the Practical Progressive, How to Build a 21st Century Political Movement, and it was written by a woman named Erica Payne, who runs the Agenda Project. She's very left. She made all of her money before getting into the Agenda Project, doing consulting for political campaigns, and her perspective, and the book actually published in 2008, and it was before Obama had taken over the Democratic primary race. So it was written ahead of that and then published in 2008. And her perspective was that you need the candidate. positions, but to be those positions. And her analogy was, you know, Michael Jordan sells you Nike shoes, but Michael Jordan is the, you know, kind of the ultimate wearer of Nike shoes. You got the Spike Lee commercials going, money, it's got to be the shoes. The product and the spokesperson become one, essentially. And that eventually, and the reason I give this such credence is that that was Barack Obama. He not only was those all of the policies that he supported, but he was a product of so many of those policies, and his success was. And so people identified that with that rather than Hillary Clinton, who was just a spokesperson for it. She supported policies, but she was not of those policies. She wasn't relatable on a lot of levels too, but that was the case. Now you fast forward to Trump and say, what's the affinity for Trump? Well, I think the biggest thing is that you have conservatives who are so tired of always being called racist or homophobic, xenophobic, whatever it is, whatever the phobia is, of always being branded with that just because they support conservative policies. I think that's probably the biggest complaint, is that when you go back and you look at the McCains, the Romneys, the Bushes, that they never pushed back on that kind of stuff. They were, that's the one thing. It's the one affinity that people have really wanted out of a Republican candidate, is, will you just not stop taking that? And that's, I think that's the affinity for Trump more than anything else, is that he hits back. And there's a whole lot of people saying, yep, don't like the guy, don't like a lot of things he says, but damn, he threw a good punch back there.
Well,
that's part of the appeal, and I don't think a lot of people on the left really understand that.
I think we're also in a situation where nobody wants a Roosevelt in a wheelchair who is brilliant. Your president now has to be your entertainment, and this guy clearly is. I mean, he's the Mike Ditka. When you drive up to Lake Forest, you came back with a story. That's why nobody liked Lovie Smith, because Lovie went up and he'd tell you about football, and that was the end of the world. That was it. We have a cup of coffee. Where Ditka was always on a rant. There was always a story. But somehow there's this phenomenon, Kevin, and I was listening to, last night I was cleaning up the crap on my TV, so I listened to an old Hawaii 5-0 episode, not the original one, but it had to do with one of the guys, Danny's kid, was being bullied. So when the father doesn't show up at the counseling meeting at the school, so Danny's pissed off, so he stops him in the squad car and says, I want to talk to you, which you probably shouldn't do. And so they end up realizing the guy's going through a divorce, he's having a rough time, so they end up being the guy's buddy, so they get the two kids together, and the kids basically work it out. And, it was, whatever, it's a TV show. But the point is, on that level, people don't like the fact that people are bullies and try and push their way through other people. Just like people don't, if you go into a grocery store and somebody cheats you, you don't necessarily like it, and you're very pissed off, especially if it's a store owned by, like, an individual person. But somehow in this country, and I don't know how they've done it, but as people get bigger, into regular people like us, regular Southsiders going to work in their lunch bucket, if anybody does that anymore, somehow or another, we feel the morality changes when people get above us. We don't understand that it's also not right for somebody big to cheat. So then how many times have you had somebody in your class or friends or whatever, or people that aren't friends, and you'll say, hey, Joe Blow just ripped off the entire state of Indiana. Yeah, but he's got shareholders. He's a businessman. He has to do that. Whoa, wait a minute. He just ripped off the whole state of Indiana. That's okay. He's only answering to his shareholders, and that's what big business guys do. Yet if you walk into the local bar and he double hits you on a beer, you're outraged. Somehow or another, these guys have managed to stretch this morality. I mean, if Trump was your kid, you'd kill him. I mean, you would never let somebody in your house act like that. And yet, it's okay for him. By the way, it's entertaining as hell. It pisses off liberals who I don't like. So it's great theater. No, it's not. I mean, I don't.
Yeah,
mean,
no,
I'd say,
and Tom, I think what you get is there's a lot of people who are both. reminds me of a great joke. I'll come back and tell you, and that is they're simultaneously appalled and happy about
yep,
the same
yep.
behavior. It's not that they've abandoned being appalled about it. They're just happy about it too because of who gets tweaked. Now, the joke is the comedian Rita Rudner saw her perform live once a long time ago, and she was married to a British guy, and he and his family were very proper, and she of course was totally irreverent, and she said, you know, so our kids. They're going to have the British and American side, so our kids are going to be thoroughly crude and totally appalled by themselves.
Oh yeah, I do it when I cancel, use the quote from Richard J. Daley. You know, who are all these alligators? Well, that was somewhat of an ignorant response to probably legitimate questions, and yet it was fun to listen to it. It showed his South Side thing, so I talk about it, but in fact. Do I really want a leader that is oblivious of what people are thinking about what he's doing? No, right? Anyway,
it sounds like it's break time. We got to get through
it. It is break time. S&P futures are up 38 now. Wow, whatever it is, we like it. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox. The Control Freak's Guide to Life, Money, and Probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell, just my over on the board. Mr. Kevin O'Neill with us as well. Dow futures up 102, NASDAQ futures up 311 at 2.7%. S&P futures up 36. We evidently, maybe if we have no president, that's what the market wants. Who the hell knows? But over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 72.6%. FTSE up 35.6%. CAC around up 43.9%. So up, but somewhat muted over there. Nikkei up 399. It's 1.7%. Shanghai up 6. It's 0.2%. Hang Seng, where did these guys come from? Minus 53.2%. I don't know what's with those dudes. Dow Jones yesterday up 554. It's 2%. S&P up 58. 1.8%. This is 2 days in a row, as yesterday was. 2 days in a row. We've got, let me get my machine back up here. As I flipped over to the election page, the NASDAQ was up 202. That's 1.8%. Bonds today are heading south, however. Actually, bonds heading north, rates heading south. Bond down to 0.81, up to 0.88 yesterday. The bond minus 0.62. They are stuck there. Japan, positive 0.04. They're stuck there. Oil, up a dollar, but still 38.68, still below 40. Right up a dollar at 9. Matter of fact, yesterday, the only real section in the market that was down, go figure, was energy yet again. Rent up a dollar 7, 40.78. Natural gas 302, down 3 cents, but still above 3 bucks. Arbob down a penny to 109. And we've got gold down a buck 90. A 19.08. We got silver down 20 cents, 24.13. You guys were down heavier earlier, and they've come flying back. Anybody got for us? Traffic, weather, sports? Stuff's all over the place this morning.
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have a crash on the inbound Eisenhower, Chief. That's right before 25th Avenue, exit 18, and it's blocking the right lane. And that's causing some delays if you're heading inbound on I-290. Route 390 to the old post office is up to 40 minutes. From Wolf Road, it's 28 minutes. Apparently, a car is pinned under a semi. And that's causing the delays with crews on the scene trying to get that cleared up. But that's our only crash on the area expressways. No issues on the Edens or Kennedy. Stevenson, all quiet. Same for the Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford. Lakeshore Drive looking good in both directions. Suburban tollways are all quiet, too. Only other crash in the area is on Route 83 at Foster Avenue in the northwestern suburbs. But everything else quiet out there. Weather today, another gorgeous November day. We can't ask for better weather than we've had this week, and it will continue through the weekend as well. Partly cloudy skies with a high of 70. Right now it is crystal clear and 51, going up to a very pleasant high of 70. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 92 today. Right now it's clear and 62. In sports, it was obviously a quiet night last night with most things being off for the election, and because it's a Tuesday anyway. So Major League Baseball, being the well-run organization that they are, decided to hand out their Gold Glove postseason awards when absolutely no one would care about it. But there were a couple of things of note. Luis Robert won the Gold Glove for center field, White Sox rookie center fielder. And a couple of Cubs won Gold Gloves as well. Anthony Rizzo won the Gold Glove at first base, and Javier Baez won the Gold Glove at shortstop. Chief.
Is that the first time a rookie has won one in center field, like in forever?
I don't know. I'll have to read up on it, but that wouldn't surprise me. Impressive.
It wouldn't surprise me, except that I do remember Fred Lynn as a rookie getting Rookie of the Year playing center field, so he might have won it then, too.
Golden Glove, though, usually you got to displace. I'm going to say, if I had to guess, I would say Andrew Jones. Maybe.
Well, yeah, possible.
So I'm reading here a Republican pollster, and, just as, to kind of, now that he's not here and I can give him grief because he wasn't right and I was a little bit, Jeff was all over this stuff because he knew more about this than anybody on earth because he's involved in the money line and all this stuff. I don't see how, Kevin, I'm not saying we should go back to this or anything like that, but when people had, if you're young, you might not understand the connection between how easy it was to get somebody's phone number and their address right with it. There was the obvious connection. I mean, the phone book, basically, look up Kevin O'Neill, there's his phone number, there's his address. It was right there. I don't know if you were a citizen. People just felt that you stayed in one spot, and you did. Not that you couldn't move, but if you really wanted to look at, the 48th precinct that went, 60% for Republican last time, and there's 1,000 people in there. All you have to do is get a 50 person. person random sample, call people up and say, by the way, where are you voting this time? And you could probably get a pretty good idea that the 55% or 65% were going Republican this time. And it was never easy, but it was the path was easy. And I don't know. I have no idea, honestly, Kevin, how you can replicate that now. How do you know if somebody's a likely voter? How do you even know if you got somebody's cell phone number where they live? I mean, I maybe there's ways. I don't know, but it's obviously not the same. I mean, you can't just go down.
The model has changed. Absolutely, yeah. The model has changed, and the polling people haven't adapted. And I don't, you know, I'm assuming they've tried, but they haven't been successful trying. So maybe they haven't. You know, maybe they believed. You know, even after last time, all they need to do is tweak it a little bit. And they were wrong about that. I did find it interesting, you know, as I was seeing polling people interviewed, and there were the outliers. There were people out there that were actually predicting a Trump victory, or that saying it wasn't so close. And in those cases, their polling methodology was different. And one example that I found interesting was they never asked him once, "How are you going to vote?" What they did was they did interviews with people and sampled attitudes, sampled things. What do you support? What do you not support? And then used that to extrapolate it into a voting model. And maybe that's what you have to do. I don't know. You still have to get locales. But you know, how many people have moved but still have their old cell phone number, and it's an area code halfway across the country? That doesn't do you much good.
Well, that's what I mean. Plus, I was just talking to Manny before the show that, people, I don't know if you ever got used to having your phone ring during dinner at home, okay, and it was a polling guy, but at least you had an idea that this was an election, the guy's doing his job. You know, I mean, you had a little, I always had a soft spot for the dude, or the girl, whoever it was. When my cell phone rings at work when I'm talking to a client, and I wonder how the hell they got my cell phone number, I have a whole different attitude toward the thing. And I don't know if I'm alone or not. I just said, my first instinct is, I don't want any of these calls on my cell phone. Because if I got my cell phone with me, and, you know, I'm not a big cell phone guy, but I usually have it in there at a business meeting or someplace where I really don't want to get bugged, unless it's somebody or something important that has to do with business. And I don't really want, and I wonder how the hell they get this number. Because first they weren't supposed to get them out, so it pisses me off. So there's just a difference in attitude towards it. At least there is for me. I mean, you know, I don't know if I'm probably.
Well, I think there's also people who go out of their way to lie.
Yeah.
To the pollsters. There are, yeah, and it may be annoyance, or it may just be, hey, I'm going to make them look bad. You know, I want to contribute to making them look bad because I don't like the influence they have. There's so much there, but they better figure it out because they're becoming irrelevant now. You know, I think, they could miss 2016 and then come back and say, well, we learned our lessons and we've made some adjustments and all that. But you can't miss 2016 and 2020 and make the same claim. There's going to be I don't know how much better internal polling is. So I kept reading that, for example, that the Biden camp for the last week to 10 days has been very concerned about Florida because their internal numbers don't match what we've been seeing on the external polls. So it may be that the people, it depends on what you're looking at, and the information that people are willing to give up for free is not the same quality of information that the candidates themselves get.
Well, we of course know our modus operandi here in the U.S. is just let's let crap just go behind us and just keep going forward without even wondering what went wrong. But some of the stuff I read that was the most interesting regarding polling was the Brexit stuff, which came about the same time as the Trump issue last time. And yet, the Brexit, it seemed like these guys made all the right conclusions in terms of what had happened. The pollsters zeroed in on people who had essentially likely voters, people who had voted in the last couple of elections, and they were totally blindsided. Evidently, people must live in the same place longer in Britain than here. They were totally blindsided by 1.5 million to 2 million people that came out and voted for to to leave the euro that hadn't voted in 10 years. They just absolutely, literally came out of the woodwork. I mean, with no polling company on earth, probably, they even knew these people were still alive, or since they hadn't voted in the last four elections, really gave them any you know bother whatsoever. So I don't know how you
they weren't likely voters in the model.
Yeah. So I don't know how you fix that one.
Unlikely voter to vote is the question. That would be a good question to have answered.
Yeah. So I don't know. So I'm sitting there thinking, okay, now the next election comes up, and now it's for Parliament. Do you figure these people are going to get their behind out of the house again? I don't think so. I mean, how do you figure out whether they're in or out when they've been out for a decade? So I mean, it's not polling is not the so here you even know where they live and you still can't figure out whether they're going to come out and vote. So I mean, it's not all that easy.
So because it's not easy though, doesn't mean that it may be impossible. And if it's and yet we live in the era when more data is collected in a year than used to be, you know, than was connected in collected over centuries beforehand. So you know the explosion in data available out there. It's just they haven't figured out yet how to how to turn it into information. It's that delineation I keep making. You know, what's data, what's information? Well, you know, information is you take the data and you organize it and start to make some sense out of it. And we live in a world where so much data is reported to us, and it's generally useless because it's not ordered, it's not organized, it's not grouped, sliced, diced, or anything like that. And so all we see is big numbers, and sometimes we're horrified by those, and sometimes we're in awe of them or delighted by them, but it's just big numbers, and it's not useful.
Well, it's back to the case counts
that we're getting now in COVID. You know, a lot of cases. So, you know, that's a big data point, but it doesn't tell me how many are hospitalized, how many doesn't tell me how many have symptoms or not. It doesn't tell you know all of those issues that come into play. We just get reported the data, and we either scoff at it or we get horrified by it.
Well, I mean, I'm constantly, unfortunately, beating the drum that there are certain principles in this world. There's economic principles, and if you increase the money supply by over a third in 1 year, you're going to get some inflation. I'm sorry, you're going to. It's not like that's the way people used to think. No, these are legitimate deals. And when I took my one class in statistics from Professor Kerm. He was one hell of a handball player. I remember that. He was one of the best on campus. But he said, look, if you're doing a survey, he says, you can use a random survey. He says, you can take a district with 5,000 people, and you can use a random number generator, which I didn't have in those times, use a random number table, if those are even around. You can go get 100 people. And if you get those 100 people, he says, you can actually do one hell of a survey. He said, but if somebody's not home, you can't get the guy across the street because there's a difference between somebody who's working and somebody who's not. you can't get the guy who just happens.
You screw up the randomness of your survey.
You totally screw up the randomness.
All of a sudden now have a non-random survey.
Right. So now all of a sudden you just mentioned we have all this data, but he would say that's all noise. Unless you can pin it to anything, unless you can prove it's random, it doesn't do you any good.
Well, no, it isn't all noise because the difference, Tom, is that. If you have 100, let's just say 100% or near 100% data, then you don't need a random sample anymore.
Right, but which they don't get though.
So for instance, let's take it back in the business world, and you're looking at quality management or something like that, and you have to, you know, so you have to manage defects. Well, if you have robotic scanners that are going to inspect every item in line really fast. And that data gets logged on a server somewhere, then you don't have to do random samples anymore to test your quality. So as a result, you're getting something different. Well, when you consider the number of people on social media expressing opinions and the numbers of people, what they purchase that's indicative of that, all kinds of behaviors, and there's so much of that available now, then you can start to draw profiles of the people and correlate that to how they vote. Now, that's a big job, and that kind of a model doesn't exist today, but that's probably where they're going to have to go if they really want to have any kind of accurate
well,
predictors
plus at the end
and accurate measures of what you know what to expect.
Plus, you don't really know
otherwise,
how they vote.
It's out of business.
Speaking of which, I voted yesterday. Boy, nothing is more aggravating than voting in Chicago. So, Maddie, I don't know if you managed to make it down the block, but or did it early, but
I did.
I'm going to say that so if you or say me, a guy like me decides I'm not going to vote for anybody who's unopposed. So what did I lose? Half the battle ballot?
That was half, yeah.
So I refused to do that, and so I had to vote for the third party for the president, hoping that they get over 5%. There actually is a third party one of these years, but I think I'm losing that fight. And then I voted no for Kim Fox, and she, of course, got in anyway. And so where does that leave me? And I voted no for all the judges except the one that Tony Preckwinkle's trying to throw out, who I happen to personally know, and he's a great guy. So talk about not exactly putting you in an uplifting mood going down the block. The good news is, Kevin, I was the only person there. There were five judges and me. So how weird is that?
That's interesting. I did not check out the polls where I was. You may remember in 2016, I went and voted, and the lines were really long here in Southwest Michigan. And Southwest Michigan had overwhelming Trump support. You could just, you know, you could feel it. You could get it talking to people, and you could see, you know, all the yard signs and all of those kinds of things. So I remember tweeting back, and it was read on the air that you know, when I look at the lines in Michigan, I think maybe this state is in play. Now, I vaguely remember whoever the producer was that day kind of scoffing at the notion, but hey, you know, that happens.
When some are so busy versus others, I mean, like I said, I'm spoiled at a point of being ignorant of this. But I've lived here a long time, and I mean, if you like to vote, you should move on my block. I mean, literally. I mean, you know what? I usually look at the number. I didn't yesterday to see how many people voted before me, because you can see it on the thing when they run the ballots through. I'll bet it was a couple of hundred, maybe. But I don't know if everybody here couldn't wait to go vote in advance or couldn't wait to run downtown on a weekend. I mean, I don't know why, unless you actually had to work yesterday. And well, I did, but you.
Well, your
you
demographic
make it there.
Was probably mail-in voters, very much so.
But they used to have two precincts there.
What I was going to say is I didn't get out there yesterday to check. I voted last week because I start teaching at 8 o'clock on Tuesdays, and I don't finish until, oh my goodness, like 4 o'clock, and by then I'm pretty toasted and I'm not about to go stand in line. So anyway, the point being, I really don't have a feel for what was going on at the polling place in Michigan yesterday. So otherwise, I'd give you an update on what I thought about that, but I really don't know.
Well, there must be some. I mean, I guess whoever puts the precincts together, way back in the day when I first moved into the hood, the little park house down the block used to have two precincts in there. The other precinct always had a line, and ours never did. Now, are all these precincts supposed to be the same number of people? And there was always a line for the other one and never for ours. And I look at some of these places where yesterday, why were all these people voting at the United Center, Maddie? There was line zero till 7:30 last night.
I don't know. What was really interesting, though, is the night before the election, Monday night, Lincoln Park High School was the area to do your early drop-off or whatever, and the line was 2 hours long. It was wrapped all the way down Armitage, and it was insane. And I was thinking to myself, why would anyone wait in that line? And then the next morning, election day, yesterday, I walked over there at 9:30, which you would think would be a relatively busy time. There was no one there. It took me 2 minutes, you know, soup to nuts, to fill out the ballot, do the whole thing, and walk out of there. And I'm like, why would anyone wait for hours to vote early? I mean, I just made no sense to me.
Well, maybe we're turning into Russia. Russia, they say if you saw a line, you just got in it. You didn't even know what it was. Anyway, I'm looking at the latest there, the latest. Longtime Republican pollster Frank Lutz told these on CNBC this morning, that Trump, the only way the numbers work for Trump, he needs to win Pennsylvania, where I guess Biden could get in by winning Wisconsin and Arizona and Nevada, and I don't know where else he's got to win, but he could sneak around Pennsylvania.
Well, and I think Trump hits 270 if he gets North Carolina, Georgia, Michigan, Wisconsin, and not Pennsylvania.
Now I
don't know if the numbers are going to support him doing that, but that's the way it looks.
Well, Donald Trump must win Pennsylvania if he's to get to 270, Lund said. Pennsylvania has 20 electoral votes. Well, Trump
then
currently holds the lead there.
Seeing Michigan or Wisconsin falling to Biden.
Which probably would be Wisconsin, not Michigan, I would think. NBC News considers the race too early to call. Lund says the mail-in votes will favor Biden heavily, and even though Trump has a slight lead in Pennsylvania now. I believe that when all the votes are counted, this is going to be dead even, which is why it's going to take at least the next 6 hours, as much as 24 hours, before we know who's the winner. It's going to be so close in Pennsylvania, it may require a state recount. So that's where that all is.
So let me.
What's up with Nevada too? They decided to pack it up and go home last night, and they aren't coming back till tomorrow.
I don't. Underlying Luntz's forecast is
which is weird.
Well, he's assuming that Trump wins.
The latest I have with 64% in Pennsylvania is that Trump is 55-7 to Biden 43-1. So
right.
You know, if all that's left is mail-ins, then Biden's got a shot. But I wouldn't be as confident as Luntz just looking at that number, because that's a lot to overcome. That's a lot.
He's not all that confident. He's a Republican guy. He's just saying that so far in some of these states the mail-in stuff has been overwhelmingly Biden, which I don't quite understand. But
Chief, let me ask you this: when I crunch the numbers here, I think Trump's going to win Pennsylvania, but I think Biden is by all indications surging back in Michigan and will likely win Michigan, and I think he's going to win Wisconsin. I think he already won Arizona by some accounts. But if Trump wins Pennsylvania and he already won Florida, I'm seeing both of them not getting to 270, like both being in the 260s. What happens if that happens?
Well, somebody's got to get there.
I think they will get to 270.
Well, there's 338, right?
If Biden wins Wisconsin, Michigan, Arizona, Nevada, which it looks like he will, but Trump wins Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Georgia, which it looks like he will. Am I missing something? I'm not seeing a path to 270.
So you're saying they're both going to end up with 269?
Yeah. It would be, like, it looks like, on the website I'm on, it looks like it would be 269.6 for Biden and 268.4 for Trump. So that would be neither at 270. Do they just round that up, or what do they do?
No, because then it comes down to the two districts in Nebraska, or the three.
Okay, so then you have
the
Nebraska and Maine, where they do the individual districts.
Right.
Okay, that's what I was wondering.
You could have one district in Nevada essentially calling the election.
Yeah, don't be surprised if that happens, because I agree with Kevin. I don't think Biden's going to come back and win Pennsylvania, but I do think he's going to come back and win Michigan, based on what I'm reading. And I think he's going to win Wisconsin, and so that's going to be an interesting scenario.
Well, let me ask you this, gentlemen.
And then if Arizona's really not decided, then you know, what's going to happen there?
Well,
that's going to become the hot spot instead of some, and that'll be interesting to see what happens.
Right, yeah. If Arizona were to flip, then Trump's going to win. I mean, Biden has to have Arizona based on what I'm seeing, unless Biden can come back and win Pennsylvania.
Well, I would love to see the entire country go to the Nebraska model, but that's a story for another day.
I would, too. But Maine went to that model in the 70s, and Nebraska went to that model in the 90s. So they're both relatively recent. And I read something that 21 other states now are considering going to that model.
Well, how many representatives does Nebraska have in Maine? Maine's only got to have one or two.
Yeah, I think Nebraska, I don't remember for sure, and let me see if it shows on this particular map.
Well, the amount of representatives are the same amount of electoral votes, right?
Nebraska has two electoral votes.
Yeah, so they get two representatives.
And Maine has two electoral votes.
Yes, okay, so instead of Nebraska being 2-0, it'll be 1-1, is what they're saying.
Yeah, it was there was. I remember seeing something about the Nebraska model that said each congressional district gets one, and then the popular vote gets one.
That's right. That's right.
You get five, but I see as I'm looking at the map here. Yeah, it says two electoral votes. So I don't know.
No, they get so they have two congressional districts plus the total. They would get three if they had two congressional districts.
Yeah, but that's not what the map says. The map says two. So have to look it up. Have to look it up. Get Russell to look it up when he comes on.
That would be very interesting. Anyway. We are going to have Russell here in a second. Good stuff, Kevin. Do you think we'll know on Friday?
Probably. I'd say probably yes. Pennsylvania might not be fully counted, but we'll have a pretty good idea, and that's going to go a long way. Wisconsin still really close. Don't know where the uncounteds are, so I don't know what to tell you about that. Michigan's still really close. Don't know how much of that is Southeast Michigan versus the rest of the state, you know, versus a Grand Rapids or someplace like that. So, you know, those are the biggies to watch in the next day, Wisconsin, Michigan, and then see if anything happens. We should know Nevada by Friday, and Pennsylvania, we should have a pretty good idea, although won't be locked up. Same thing, North Carolina and Georgia. I think those are going to wrap up this morning.
So if we don't have a president in, say, 3 weeks, is the NASDAQ going to be double? All the tech companies going to be double? Because nobody else will
be
around?
Double anyway, Tom. They're all going to be double anyway.
All right. S&P futures up 43. Right back, Mr. Russell Rhodes.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happened.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howie, Mr. Milwerber on the board. S&P futures up 48. like yesterday. Dow futures not as much, though, up only 129. Nasdaq futures up a lot more, though, 374. We have Professor Mr. Russell Rhodes with us. How are you, Russell?
I'm tired. How are you?
I hung in there. I actually dozed listening to the idiots, but then I woke back up at like 1 and watched for another hour, and I figured it still isn't going anywhere, so I went to sleep.
Yeah, I gave up about 12:30. I'm surprised to see how things turned while I was asleep.
As far as
assumptions go, I went to sleep thinking Trump would win this thing.
You thought he would or wouldn't?
Would. I went to sleep.
Yeah, I paid no attention really to the polls. I saw people leaving the Trump camp. And I saw people leaving the Democratic camp, and I really didn't know how it was going to play out. I thought it would end up pretty even, and I guess I'm right, but I still don't know where it's going to land here. I would hope that
I think we know where it's going to land. Looking through the numbers, it's like I've been saying for a while. Everything had to go 100% right for Trump, and it looks like it's not going to. It looks like Biden will win it.
How do you see that happening? Do you see Biden pulling out Wisconsin or Pennsylvania?
Well, I don't think he'll win Wisconsin, but I think like Michigan might flip back, or and Pennsylvania might, even though he's leading in both those states, and that will be the that'll be kind of the death knell, and they'll be done.
So you think Biden wins Michigan?
I think Biden will win Michigan. Yeah, they stopped counting votes, right? They stopped counting the absentee ballots, correct?
Just for the night or something, and went home.
I don't mean like Trump wants them to. They stopped voting. They stopped counting those. And I really do think that the ground game was really strong with respect to absentee ballots for the Democrats, especially in states they were concerned about. And Michigan is way up there on that list. And I think this, even though Trump is way ahead in Pennsylvania, I have a funny feeling that there are a whole lot of votes in Philadelphia that haven't been counted yet, and if that's not enough, they'll find some more. Although I really don't believe that either side could steal the election, I just think there's too many eyes on both sides watching everything that goes on. I think whatever ends up happening, I think it's actually legitimate. My better half last night said if Trump wins this thing, they stole it. They did all kinds of illegal things, and I just can't believe that he, I'm almost like, oh my God, you've got to believe in the integrity of the outcome, or it just ruins your attitude about everything else.
That's what happened to me.
Yeah. So I'm going to blindly believe in the integrity of our system. For my own good, but I think we all should just do our very best.
I'm gonna put what you say in different terms, because actually I think you're totally wrong in terms of motivation. But I think what you're really saying, not putting words in your professorial mouth, that both sides are trying so hard to cheat and ended up somewhat even.
I didn't think of it that way, but just to really take a big right turn when nobody in the world got any sleep, there are academics that say that all the different behavioral mistakes that people make come out in the wash, so the markets are still efficient. I don't agree with that. But
that's why the only person that would ever give them a paycheck is an academic institution.
Yeah, that's not exactly how I'm thinking about it, but I could see that being, Trump stole Michigan, but Biden's got a bunch of buddies in Pennsylvania, so he stole Pennsylvania. I really don't think that you can steal an election. Not one that everybody's watching so freaking closely. If I wanted to steal my school board election, I could have done something, but,
Well, but you can... In any individual area, the thieves are the thieves. I mean, the amount of ballots that I got here in Illinois, and Jesse White got all into it, Jesse White's not anxious to get a Republican to mail in a ballot.
No.
So,
no.
Yet in some of the Republican states, you know, I was reading that they had one place to drop in your ballot, and like one place in a county. Well, a county in Texas is probably bigger than half the states, right?
Oh,
so I'm gonna,
counties all like that everywhere that are bigger than Delaware.
So what I'm saying is, you know, if the Republicans were in charge of the state or the Democrats, they did all they possibly could to screw the other side in every state.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's not like they didn't try. Now, I happen to sort of agree with you. I don't know that it was enough to keep Texas red.
Yeah.
I clearly don't think that Jesse White screwing around made Illinois bluer. I mean,
No.
No. So, I mean,
I don't think he had to screw it around. I think it's more of a he could just get away with doing whatever he wants to do.
Right. And, you know, it's probably more for the Kim Foxes of the world than it is the presidential election,
mm-hmm.
would be my guess. But by the same token, these people, I think, try every little game they can. In a minute of the mm-hmm. amount, I read stories in some of your southern states that are red. You know, couldn't wait to close polling places because of the COVID out in the middle of nowhere where people don't have cars and that kind of thing. So, I mean, it's the fact that people, at the end of the day, you look at the map, it looks like, you know, maybe people didn't, they weren't all that successful and things landed where they're supposed to land. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, in Georgia, the Democrats thought the state might be in play. Now it looks like, mm-hmm. you know, Trump got it. Now did the screwing around and all the, you know, the rural and poor counties in Georgia cause, you know, 50,000 people to not vote? Did he win by 40? I don't know. I mean,
you know, Georgia, what I heard coming out of Georgia, and I lived in Atlanta for 5 years, so I kind of, you know, although it's twice as big as it was when I was there 20 years ago, but they were saying that you know, you have to be very careful when you talk about race, but they were saying at the vote in person precincts that are in the city of Atlanta that are probably 90 to 95% African American, that the mail in wasn't all that great and the turnout wasn't all that great. And that's
right.
That's why Georgia didn't go. And I'm actually wondering if Joe Biden did a couple of things during the campaign that may have alienated some African American voters, that they're just like, you know, I can't, but, and I don't want to get into all the specifics and stuff, but I just can't believe that he said, you ain't black if you're voting for me, if you're not voting for me, you know, and I would find that very condescending.
If Trump said
you're not an upper middle class suburban white guy if you're not voting for me, that'd have pissed me off even more, and I'd have been more happier about voting for Joe Jorgensen.
Well, but I
getting at them.
By the way, that's who I voted for. Just so you know.
Did you? I got like 20 people to vote for her, and it didn't go as well as I'd hoped it would for the Libertarians. But it is. You know,
they got to get their act together a little bit. I keep thinking that my one more vote might push them to realize they could be a real party. They might actually do something one of these years, but it doesn't seem like it's working.
It did. Yeah, I had high hopes for this.
I mean, it's hard for me to imagine that. I mean, it's really hard for me to imagine that. You know, an African American person, or white, or wherever you happen to be, blue, green, whatever. If you look at a period of work, if Joe says something stupid, you know, and all of a sudden you're going to be insulted. And I mean, if you've been listening to Trump, it's hard for me to imagine that one thing Biden would say would chase you into Trump's neighborhood.
I think you remember, and I'm really not going to get into specifics on this one, but you remember when Ross Perot was running and he was doing extremely well, and then he spoke in front of the NAACP, and he used a phrase that is considered, you know, that African Americans do not like, you know, although it seems innocent, but it's not. If you always feel like your party has taken you for granted, and then your presidential candidate says something like that, it has to have an impact, you know. And it's just like almost a confirmation of a long-term trend of, you know, just feeling like you're part of the electorate is going to automatically vote for the Democrat.
Well, I mean, there isn't to say that there isn't. I mean, something some knucklehead could say.
It's like a confirmation of something that's always in the back of your mind.
Okay, but I mean, if let's put it this way, which came first, the chicken or the egg? I mean, if black people always vote Democrats because Democrats always do good stuff for them.
And then they stop doing good stuff for them. And they
well, then they stop. Yeah, I mean, whether or not they're
Hispanic Americans, Latino Americans,
I cannot imagine. Well, as somebody who's been a Democrat his whole life, I can't. If you were to ask me with the big light on me under pain of torture, I couldn't write down five things the Democratic Party stands for. Now, I have no idea. That's why I can't vote for them.
I think both parties stand for. Pandering to a base and then trying to eke out a win by saying things that sound good.
Yeah, well, that's I don't understand the system. You're not quite as old.
It's a duopoly that nobody.
No, what I'm saying is the system used to be is that your votes were in the middle. There used to be a middle class. The votes were in the middle, whether or not you were white, black, blue, whatever. The votes were in the middle, so. It was your job as a Republican, which, you know, you're probably closer to. You were supposed to go, you know, have dinner with the extreme right losers and you know, get the check, get to your car, put the alcohol in your hands, count your fingers, and then go back to the middle and try and get the votes. When the Democrats, you're supposed to walk to the there's some guy, you know, having lunch tied to a tree, get his check, and then walk back in the middle and get the votes. That was the game for most of my lifetime. Now all of a sudden you get your essentially losers on each side. I'm probably a little strong with that. It's 25% or 20% of the electorate that you know are going to vote for you. Say 25%, and then you got 50% in the middle that don't seem to know what the hell they're doing. They don't have a candidate really. So the two people take the 25 or 30%. They merely happy for the poll and figure that. Half the other people will vote for him. That's been the plan now for the last three or four elections. Maybe not Obama, but well, that would have been three. But right now, I mean, Trump knows that there's only 25 or 30% of the people that actually quote like the guy. Biden probably only has 25 or 30%. It could be all the LGBT. It could be all those people that they've been pandering to, and then they say, well, the middle, they don't really like Joe Biden or Kamala Harris. I don't. And then all of a sudden, now you've got 40% of the people or 30% of the people that are undecided, and you figure if I split that, I'm okay because I got 30% and Joe's only got 25, which maybe the way this works out. But that's totally different than it was when you and I were growing up.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, Oh, well. I've reached that point where you hear, and I always felt like it came from people that don't pay enough attention when they say both the parties are a lot alike. They really kind of are a lot alike.
Well, sure they are.
And the one thing they have in common is that they don't want to, whatever power each of them has, they don't want a third party to start taking it. Or if a third party starts taking it, they want to make sure it's the one that doesn't take it from them.
Well, that's right. And they both are absolutely pandering to big business, and there's no difference between the nice, allegedly nice old lady, Nancy Pelosi, stealing money for her husband every which way she can, and Schumer stealing money for his wife who was on the board of... I mean, there is no difference in these people in everything that matters to us. Anyway, I mean, there might be a slight difference in one will tax the rich a little more than the other people, and one will... You know, throw a little more in Medicaid back in the state versus the other, but it's peanuts compared to what they're stealing on top. And somehow or another, we got to stop that. And look at this mess today. Now we just came out with private payroll growth 375 instead of the 680 that came out, and all our stuff just rallied. I mean, I don't see, despite all this crap we're talking about, you look at the numbers, you look at the deficits, and you look at the people in trouble. The numbers are off the charts, and yet. Nobody cares, because now we're zeroing into, we don't care. Well, as long as the S&P 500, or, you know, dominated by 15 stocks, continues to go up, somebody thinks, And we've talked a whole population into thinking if your 401k goes up, you're okay. It doesn't matter if you get a job. I mean, in our lifetime, Russell, the idea that you build wealth when you and I were kids, how do you build wealth? You made $100, you spent 50 at the saloon or on your car, and you put 50 in the bank, you know, when you were 18 years old.
Exactly.
And now, exactly. Nobody gets wealth that way. It's somehow being in the right stocks and having the president, favor your stock and your stock goes up. I mean, name me what percentage of people do you know, your kids know, that somehow are able to save 20% a week of their paycheck?
Oh, gosh. Nobody in this day and age would have, but, you know, back when you were younger, yeah. You would automatically.
You might get, you're going to get your contribution to your 401k coming out before you get the check. So there is not like there's no savings coming in. But it's the idea that you're going to build wealth by working on a regular job and just saving money. Good luck to you.
No, you got to live super frugal in this day and age.
And you have to somehow invest. You got to flip a house. You got to do something, which is getting harder
to
do, by the way.
You got to have a second. You got to pick a great IPO once.
Yeah, or something.
And most people don't have that. Yeah, and that's not going to happen for most people.
Well, if you keep your wits about you and have some money, not a real lot, and you wait for the next real estate crash, which seems to come what every 12, 15 years, maybe you can scoop up a couple of places and due to somebody else's hard times and compound a bit. But that's not how you build wealth. Well, it is how you build wealth, but it's not how an economy builds wealth. Because all you did was build the wealth back from the guy who just lost it. So you're net even, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if the house is worth $200,000, if the house is worth $200,000, they boot the guy out because he can't pay the mortgage, he's lost his job, somebody wrecks the place, or it just sits there for a year before some bank decides to let it go in a foreclosure because they're blithering idiots when it comes to that stuff. So you pick it up at 125, put 30 or 40 back into it, and sell it for 200. You're happy, but all you are, in terms of wealth of the country, all you are is back to the 200, right?
Mm-hmm.
You got no gain.
Yeah. No, the country's wealth hasn't gone up. It's just got it's like a deck chair. It got moved around a little bit.
What's so refreshing to talk to you, Russell, is not that I can get you to agree with me on a few things, but just the way these numbers are counted, and the way things are brought out, virtually no one, even a lot of the contributors to the show are really bright people. But this is, they're not, economics is not their game, but the numbers that are being tossed about and the way things are being counted, the fact that most people don't understand even the basics of it really lets people like Trump and Biden blow crap by you on a daily basis. I mean, just the stuff like, fiscal, we need a fiscal plan, we need an infrastructure thing. Nobody's, yesterday I should have brought it, I got it at work. I got a big article regarding how China keeps ratcheting down their purchase of U.S., maybe because of the fights, maybe because of
I think they don't have any money.
Well, that could be. But I'm saying either way, and the article's thing was, and the person who wrote it was a couple people wrote it, I think a guy and a girl, and it had to do with who's going to finance all the U.S. debt for some sort of a infrastructure program, or for the deficit or whatever. Not once in the 15 paragraphs there did they mention that the person financing it is the Fed is printing it and buying the damn bonds right back. Now, don't you think that if you're going to write that article, that you need to at least have a concept of that's what's happening?
Mm-hmm.
How is it,
oh,
if nobody's buying the $3 trillion this year, did the Treasury manage to sell $3 trillion worth of Treasuries? And you look at the Fed balance sheet and you go, there it is. I mean, how do you write that article and all you do is talk about China being down a couple hundred billion? Well, a couple hundred billion is significant, but basically it's a pimple on the ass of an elephant, isn't it? Compared to the Fed printing the money and buying the stuff.
Oh yeah, it's not it's definitely not a big dollar amount when you compare it to the Fed recycling, the doing what they're doing now. This came up in one of the, I taught a special class for MBA students on Monday night, and this totally came up. And you know, somebody even asked, "Well, who keeps buying bonds?" I said, "Well, they're buying them from themselves."
What kind of a recognition did you get when you said that, even in a graduate class?
I think a couple of people actually woke up, and it went late into the night, that class did, and there was one guy that I think was doing his very best to stick with me, but I'd look over every once in a while, he looked like he was snoozing. It got them to actually get into a discussion after we'd been doing a bunch of other things for about 3 hours. So it was a wake up to them that it's Bernanke a long time ago, he actually referred to these things as an accounting trick to keep things going. That's what he called it when he was asked about it. And that's how I kind of pass it on to them, tried to play it off to them as well, to think of it that way. To think of
isn't it an accounting trick to
track up their sales by buying things from themselves?
Well, it is an accounting trick if you're Goldman Sachs, because you're getting both sides of the transaction.
Exactly.
So do you think everybody's been talking about, well, it's assuming Biden gets in, which I don't think is a big assumption right now. Do you think everybody's talking about Elizabeth Warren being one of my Trump supporter friends. Do you want Elizabeth Warren as the Secretary of the Treasury? I go, the guy from Goldman Sachs just gave Joe Biden $100,000 out of his own pocket. It's a question of who the next Goldman Sachs Secretary of the Treasury is going to be. What are you from Mars?
Yeah, it's not going to be. That's actually what I've been telling the all the students to pay more attention to who he puts in that cabinet. Because now that he's gotten elected, he's going to be able to. I really do think, just looking at Joe Biden, and he does seem like a really good guy. I just don't see him as being. He doesn't come across to me as being some super hardworking guy. You know, he appears to me to be the guy that kind of shows up to the Senate, shakes hands with a bunch of people. Everybody likes having him around, and. But not one that's putting in 20-hour days and that sort of thing. I think he'll delegate a lot to his to the cabinet.
I could be wrong. Does anybody know of any? I mean, Mike Werko used to write about Adlai Stevenson, who nobody even knew existed, right? Pretty much as a senator, and yet Mike Werko said he would pick the hardest topics, and he would personally, maybe some staff help. He would write a white paper himself, like on Social Security or something, and distribute it to the rest of the senators and say, look, I see that as a problem. Here's my solution. Where he would actually do stuff. I mean, I'm not saying Biden's never done anything like that, but I don't think any of these guys do this kind of stuff anymore, where they actually...
I don't think there are a lot of... Actually, I know a lot of people do not agree with him, but I actually think Mitch McConnell puts in the hours.
And, well, he could. Well, the speaker, I think you almost have to. I mean, how much of the hours is glad handing, and how much of it is, talking to this guy, that guy, making sure you got their vote versus actually sitting down on a subject or somebody on the agricultural committee actually, going alone for a month and writing something up and saying, this program is not working, here's why, here's a better one. I mean, I'm sure that stuff's going on, but I never see it, do you? I mean, does anybody even do that? Is there any return for it?
No. I think the reason I think he does is he seems to manage what's going on in the Senate very well, and he was able to push through this Supreme Court nominee very quickly, and I think the way that he did it, he made it go as smoothly, a lot more smoothly than I think a lot of people thought it would. That's one way to put it. But I think he was able to manage that process quite well. I think they have him as majority or minority leader or whatever he'll be next. I think he'll continue to be majority leader for a reason, because he's I don't think you would. I don't think when he was in the Senate, you would have given majority leader to Biden. He wasn't ever majority leader, was he?
No. I don't even think he was. He wasn't even the whip, was he?
Yeah. I don't think he really. I think he was in the Senate. He was in the Senate for a long time, but he was never really part of the leadership of the Senate.
No, I mean, Durbin was actually second, wasn't he? When,
I remember he was whipped for a while.
Anyway, when we come back, let's talk about whoever gets in, the numbers don't change because, you know, we're talking about this guy's going to do this. You think if Trump's in another 4 years, he'll realize you don't just get to go to the Supreme Court without going somewhere else first, like he said last night in his tweet, we're going right to the Supreme Court?
Maybe he'll learn a little bit about government in another 4 years, but I don't think he's going to have the chance.
Well, I'm flipping a coin here. You're convincing me he wins Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. I'm not as convinced. Biden, I mean.
We'll see. Yeah.
All right,
we'll see.
All I know is that our girl isn't going to win anything.
Yeah,
Jorgensen.
I am actually pretty. That's probably my biggest disappointment after last night was the Libertarian showing.
Well,
I have an extra Jorgensen sign. Next time I come down, do you want it for the studio?
Well, I said to my brother, I voted against Kim Fox. He goes, why? The other guy's even worse. And I go, how do you know that? I go, I know his brother. His brother didn't even like him. I'm going, why don't you tell me now before? I mean, this is bad when you can't find anybody on there you like. S&P Futures up 53. Not sure why that is. NASDAQ Futures up 399. Dow Futures up 161. Be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howie, Mr. Merrill Weber. S&P futures up 58, 3 days in a row of this. Absolutely to the moon. NASDAQ futures up 404, Dow futures up 174. We're not sure exactly who's behind this, whether it's the Fed or whether it's just people happy with nobody winning yet. I can't imagine that, no matter what side you're on. Because that won't last. That's why we're going up. That's not going to last. Anyway, over in Europe, we've got DAX up 138. That's a full 1% now. So these guys are up more than they were a while ago. That's 1.1%. FTSE up 59. That's a full 1%. CAC around up 69. 1.4, even though one of the German big guys claims that this could lead to a constitutional crisis in the U.S. and a worldwide problem. Yet everybody's stocks are up. DK up 399. That's 1.7%. Shanghai up 6.2%. Hang Seng, what's with these guys? Down 53.2%. Just
Alibaba?
Review. Oh, must be. S&P futures yesterday were up, or S&Ps were up 58 yesterday. NASDAQ up 202. So we're up even more today in the NASDAQ. However, the Dow is up 554 today. They're pausing a little. They're almost only up like 200 now. Bonds. Bonds are down 10 basis points. Bonds are up huge because the 10-year is down 10 basis points from yesterday. That is a massive move. They're down to 0.77, 0.87. It doesn't seem like much, but boy, down at those levels, that's a big percentage. Bund, minus 0.64, so they still can't get out of their own way over there. Japan, positive 0.04 like it has been now forever. Oil, up 92 cents, but still only 38.58. Brent, up 99 cents, 40.70. Natural gas, down 2 cents, still up 303. Our Bob, up a penny to 109. We've got gold, is now down 230. Gold's been up and down all morning. 19.08, and silver's down 14 cents. 24.14. I can't say that I've ever seen anything quite like this, Russell, but we'll talk about that when Manny's done with traffic, weather, sports. Not much sports, Manny, except for the election, I guess, is sports.
Yeah, not much sports, but that's become sports, hasn't it? 36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We still have just the one significant crash in the area. That's on the inbound Eisenhower just before 25th Avenue. Apparently, a car was hit. A semi was on a shoulder when a car hit the semi and slid underneath it. And so it was pinned in under the semi. And this has been going on for a couple of hours this morning. But it has major delays on the inbound Eisenhower. Route 390 to the old post office on 290 is up to 45 minutes. From Wolf Road, it's up to 35 minutes. So crews are still working on getting that cleared. And that's our slowest moving expressway. On the Kennedy, you'll see some heavy traffic volumes, but nothing out of the ordinary if you're heading in on a Wednesday. No accidents to report. Outbound side looks okay. Eden's looking good as well. Lakeshore Drive's been quiet in both directions. Same for the south side. Ryan, I-57, Bishop Ford, and the Stevenson all quiet this morning. Off the expressways, we have a crash out west, Route 83 at North Avenue in the western suburbs. And then in the far western suburbs, Route 59 at North Avenue, there is a crash. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today also looking good. In fact, very good. Partly cloudy skies with a high of 70 today. We'll be in the 60s and 70s for the rest of the week and through the weekend. And that'll be excellent. Right now it's clear and 52 going up to a high of 70. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 92 today. Right now it's clear and 63. In sports, the only real thing of note last night was Major League Baseball announced its Gold Glove winners. And there was a few guys that we care about. The Cubs had a pair of Gold Glove winners. Anthony Rizzo won for first base, and Javier Baez won the Gold Glove for shortstop in the National League. And on the American League side, rookie center fielder Luis Robert won the Gold Glove for the White Sox. Chief.
Why don't you do something intelligent and call up your softball people and say, why don't you have your playoffs tonight? Everybody else has got to be done. You're the other guys got rained out.
Well, we could. They apparently don't have any openings, but it's going to be 69 and sunny on Monday when we're going to have the first two rounds of the playoffs. But they did surprise us. They released the bracket yesterday, and all of a sudden they're doing the playoffs over 2 weeks, which was never told to anybody and was never agreed upon when we signed up for the league. So they're going to do the first half of the playoff bracket on Monday night when it's supposed to be 69 and sunny, which is great. And then if you win that, then the semifinals and finals are on the following Monday, and who knows what the weather will be like on November 16th.
Well, three games is a lot, though.
It is. So we play at 8 o'clock on this coming Monday. And if we win, then we play at 10 o'clock in the quarterfinals. And then if we win that, then we go to next week. I feel like we got kind of a terrible draw when a lot of teams get to play at 6 and 8 or 7 and 9. We have to play 8 and 10.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, looking at your team, as my uncle used to say, do not let the evil specter of lack of conditioning raise its ugly head. How's that for a saying?
I like it. I like our team. We got the sixth seed out of 17 teams, which I don't understand because we're tied for second place record-wise, and we have the best run differential. So this whole league is kind of screwy. So I don't know how they seeded, if they just flipped a coin or what they did, but we're the sixth. We play the 11 seed in the first round, and if we win, then we'll move up to the quarterfinals. The 11th seed is 3-3. We finished at 4-2, but two of the 11th seed's losses were by forfeit. So they could be really good. I don't know. So we'll find out.
Well, that's interesting. Well, we've got the S&P futures now are up 66. The NASDAQ up 455. Russell, I have to ask. I mean, there's somebody, I mean, my people are long here, so I guess I'm happy, but I don't. I'm just as concerned on the market when it races up crazy amounts and it goes down.
I've read a couple of places where they've said that the Senate's not going to shift to the Democrats. I'm still trying to find the hard numbers on that, but if the Senate's still controlled by the Republicans, you might not see as drastic tax increases as Biden would like to implement, and I think that would be better for the stock market and better for business. Where I would get that. That's why I would think that. I think the Senate became more important than the presidency over the last couple of weeks.
I've been lobbing that one out there too. But I just I know there's this crazy view going around, like really for the last 25 years that gridlock is best for the market. I don't think I've ever seen the economy this bleaked up. I'm not so sure that gridlock for 4 years now is a solution to anything.
I think one of the reasons that we're kind of in a screwed up situation like we are is, and that we haven't been able to fiscally manage our way through a pandemic, is because we've had a split. We haven't had all red or all blue in there, and they've had a hard time agreeing on things. Maybe they'll have an easier time agreeing on things with things being split up if we have nothing but adults at the table. Of course, one of them might fall asleep at the table every once in a while, but he's going to delegate to his cabinet, I promise.
But we have...
I always felt like if it was a blue wave, like people were talking about, that we were going to come in today and the S&P was going to be down 5%. Just because of the tax thing. And the fact that it looks like it's going to be kind of mixed, I think the market takes that well. I kind of like that. Generally, when the government takes really drastic measures and tries to change our way of life, it doesn't go well. And there are all these, unintended consequences. I don't think we're going to have, any unintended consequences if we have a mixed government.
But my point is, I understand that that's the drill, but why we were, down 7% last week and now we're up 7% in 3 days, and all of a sudden, the government of the last 4 years, to me, has been abysmal on virtually every level. So the idea that four more years of that, other than finding some way to get big stocks get even bigger, I don't see us any better. And if we come back with Trump, the Democratic House and the Republican, same mix we have now, looking at the last 4 years, why would that make anybody bullish? I'm just curious. I'm not saying Biden be better.
I think the assumption is that it's going to be Biden with a Republican Senate. I think that's what the market's responding to right now. I think the market was prepared for Biden and a Democratic Senate. So now you're seeing somewhat of an adjustment around all of that. That's my first, and again, I've
you know, I was like you. I was up most of the night. I got up 20 minutes before we were before I was supposed to come on with you, and I'm digging through numbers as I talk, which I'm never really good at talking and typing at the same time. But and just digging through the numbers, that's the way that it the way that it kind of looks. I want to, you know, I've got two things. One is, you know what, this is the fun one. I want to make sure we get to this one. What's the over under on how much longer Trump's current marriage lasts if he's not in the White House?
What if he is in the White House?
Well, you know, either way, but I have a funny feeling that I don't give it a year if he doesn't win.
So you think she's going to put up with another 4 years in the White House, which she absolutely hates?
No, I think she'll probably take the kid and go back to New York or go down to Florida or something like that and go be a single-ish mom. But you know, 4 years ago when he won, she basically kind of renegotiated the prenup to make sure old Barron gets taken care of, and so she's prepping for an escape. She's hiding that. She's Shawshanking it, man.
Well, I'm trying to think.
She's got a picture of George Clooney in her White House bedroom, and she's been digging a big hole behind that. She's going to Shawshank her way out of there.
You know, I guess you see it when you kick up Amazon or something all the time, or not Amazon, but I don't really pay much attention there because I never had any idea whether the people writing the articles know what they're talking about. It's obvious to anybody who looks at body language, this isn't her highest and best spot. I mean, she came here, she married a guy with a lot of money. She's a bright lady. She speaks, you know, a bunch of languages.
So do not doubt that she's not intelligent. I think she's smarter than he is.
She's climbed the mountaintop, and she probably basically is embarrassed to hell that the guy's the president and he's sitting in a can every morning tweeting. You know, I mean.
Yeah.
Did you see
what she said about that?
No, I didn't.
She was giving a speech, and she goes, you know, and I agree with this. She said, you know, one of the positives is he has the ability to speak directly to the American people. And I like that with respect to technology. She said, but I don't always agree with everything that he tweets. And got a nice chuckle out of that one.
Well, I mean, as your buddy Warren Buffett once said, you can always reserve the right to call somebody a son of a bitch tomorrow once you think about it for a little bit. You find out that half the time, you find out you don't have to say it because maybe you were a little too hasty. But if you've got a guy who's the ultimate narcissist just telling everything off the top of his head, you know, I mean, what Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, they asked him about all the tweeting from all the athletes, and he said, well, you got to be careful that you just don't solidify everybody's view that you're just another dumb jack. You just might be, or something along those lines. which is very similar to my English teacher in freshman year of high school. Said to one of the guys in the class, it's better to keep your mouth shut and be thought a fool than open it and remove all doubt. How's that for a freshman teacher to tell you? I think that if all of a sudden, all day long, everybody either driving or maybe having an adult beverage or working, that I just, whatever came off the top of my head, I tweeted out, I got to believe at the end of the year I'd like to have a few of those back.
Yeah.
Just saying.
So, and then the other thing, and I'm not going to pick on this, I'm not picking on this person for his life accomplishments, but what the hell has Scott Kelly done in his life to qualify himself to be a senator? And he's the astronaut who just got elected out in Arizona.
All right, plus or minus the football coach in Alabama, Tommy Tuberville.
Oh, yeah, same thing. Same exact thing. If you're a football coach, you're having to organize a bunch of stuff. I don't understand. I never understood why John Glenn was a senator. I think Heath Shuler, who played for the University of Tennessee, he became a congressman. And maybe he majored in poli sci and interned with people. I don't know, but you know, the merits that we elect people on sometimes, it just makes me question. I'm not saying that we're supposed to be lifetime politicians either. The problem is, you know, Scott Kelly will probably, you know, if he wants to, he'll probably spend the next 30 years in being a senator.
Well, the idea is
maybe learn some things in the first 6 years.
Well, the idea is it's the people's house, right? They're supposed to be
very
close to the population.
A mix of folks.
And there's 435 people, and you're going to get people that reflect the districts. So you're not going to get, you know, you're not going to get Einstein everywhere. I mean, but the idea that people now, for whatever reason, I mean, if you read the a lot of the history that I do, and a lot of people do, I'm not the only one. You look at the politicians. Well, these are the ones that you hear about. Now, I'm sure there's other guys that were total dum-dums. I mean, you'll read about the senators, the guys like Truman and people that, you know, these people actually, you know, read all kinds of books without pictures and were, you know, they were historians. They were all kinds of things. I mean, but then I'm sure there were senators in every era where you wonder how the hell they got there, right? I mean, it's not like it's, but right now people are absolutely convinced, maybe because it's the Twitter or because of sports, you know, whether it's sports radio. I mean, listen to sports radio. Everybody's an expert. Everybody could be a GM tomorrow. It's the same thing in politics.
I can manage the Sox.
Oh, yeah. You can manage the Sox. And, you know, I mean, let's put it this way. I could come a lot closer to managing the Sox because I've coached softball my whole life than I ever could coaching the Hawks. what I've never played hockey in my life. I mean, at least I have a fighting chance, I guess, if I got a good bench coach like Manny Weber on the Sox, I could at least fake it for the Sox. I couldn't fake it for hockey. God help you if I was there for soccer.
Well,
there's people who think they watch one game and are an expert, right?
Well, I think about that all the time. I think I could sort of, like you said, fake it for basketball or baseball. But even football, a sport that we've watched our entire lives that we know a lot about and maybe played in middle school or high school or beyond, there's no way I could coach football. There's so many elements to it that I don't understand.
Gosh.
You know what I mean?
It's like chess.
Absolutely. And
it's
every
like
technique.
Real time chess, especially in this day and age where you got somebody up in the press box, you know, watching all the moving pieces and feeding stuff back down to the coach.
Right, and the idea that, you know, it's a 100-man roster and you have to manage all of those different departments and egos and, you know, disgruntled players.
Yeah.
And
I could.
There's no.
I would say a football coach gets you, a college football coach gets you closer to qualification for the Senate than being an astronaut. And again, I mean, the guy's done some incredible stuff, but it's. I mean, you know, we elected a reality TV star as president 4 years ago.
Yeah.
We've gotten away from what the qualifications are to be president or, you know, who we want there. And I would be okay with it if we had term limits where, you know, a bunch of different people came in and participated in government. That's really how it should be. And this brings me to what I think the libertarians should do. They should hang their hat on term limits because everybody agrees on that one.
I don't
find one big. They have. You don't agree with that one?
No.
You don't think we should have term limits?
I think we have way more. I think we have our biggest problem right now in the House is not the term limits. It's the people that get in the House and don't do anything for 4 years and they're good people and they all leave. The turnover in the House is higher than it's ever been.
I think they should. I mean, I don't. I think they're. You know,
you can't. I mean, I think what you say. I'm not disagreeing totally with what you say. What I'm saying is, right now, you can't have a situation where, with the current, I think let's put it this way. Let's both agree that the rules should change in the House. You shouldn't have to be there 20 years before you get a decent committee assignment. Right now, I can't think of a more useless job than a freshman representative. What do you do for 2 years? I don't care if you're in the you're in the majority party or the minority. Nobody cares what you think.
No, they don't. It's like you're in an entry level job.
Well, and then what did Kyle tell us, Manny, about how his buddy that he I guess he must have backed money wise and helped out became a representative down in Florida. I'm sure he's a Republican. Not that it matters. He said he went to one of those things that isn't it Princeton where you go to your weekend retreat where they tell you all about being a rep and your what they call it, your orientation, and they demanded that you use one of their phones. You couldn't have a personal phone, and if you didn't use their phone where they knew right where you were, right where you did, and who you called and everything, that they wouldn't give you a committee assignment or something? Wasn't that what he said, Manny, something like that? We could ask him on Friday, probably, if he comes on.
Yeah.
But didn't he give us that story? And his buddy lasted 2 years and said, screw this, I've accomplished nothing. It's the worst 2 years I've ever spent in my life. I'm out of here.
Yeah, I remember that. Yep.
I mean, that's not what we need. I wonder the people in 2018, both the four Republicans and the four Democrats that I listened to on Face the Nation, I was impressed with all eight of them, and said maybe there's hope for us. I wonder how many of them did run again, if any.
David writes in, he says, guys, term limits would give the party operatives even more power than they currently have. Besides, the players would just end up being moved around on the chessboard from seat to seat.
Yeah, I mean, you wonder who would suck up that, you know, that sort of that spot. I mean, you know, the power spot, because every power vacuum, you know, somebody fills it, right, Russell?
Oh yeah.
I mean, if you forced
somebody gonna come grab it.
Yeah, now if you forced, at some point you look at somebody like Pelosi or even McConnell, and you go, she's got to go. I mean, didn't they say that she was?
I thought she
only had two more years.
This would be the last time.
She did
say
that,
I let's put it this way. I read it. I heard it. I never saw her on camera say, "This will be the last." You know, it's like I heard it secondhand, and that's why I say I think, because she can always say, I never said that.
Well, if that party loses to Trump again, which I think they might, and they don't take over the Senate, how could she possibly say she did a good job the last 2 years?
It's like
a guy going in with a 1-12 record saying he was a great coach.
Well, that's just because she, just because she believes that.
I have a question for you, and this, I guess, has to do with me. I don't know. I don't like big things, I guess. But explain to me exactly how the hell Uber managed to get a state vote to be exempted from some law. I mean, what are we doing?
I didn't think that was to get them exempted from a law. I thought. Are you talking about California?
Yeah, they exempt them from the state labor law.
Well, that's because it's not necessarily exempt from the state labor law. It's they want the drivers to be classified as independent contractors as opposed to employees.
Right.
So
there is
to provide all the.
But there are a million. There are a million labor laws in California that apply to everybody else. And if you listen to Lou over the last 7 years. There's this constant fight among the states about whether people are full-time employees or whether they're not. A lot of it was made even worse with Obamacare and all that kind of stuff. So the idea that some company would be big enough, I mean, what if I won't use my name in here, I'll use yours, the Webby and Russell Blue Jean Factory somehow got a state plebiscite and said they want the ability to use 14-year-old girls to sell blue jeans. That, by the way, they'll be $20 cheaper and better than any other blue jean you ever own. Where do you think that vote goes? I mean, why is that a vote? why do you get to opt out of that? How could you possibly be that big to have people's vote is whether you should follow the law? I mean, am I totally nuts here?
I mean, I didn't read the specifics of it, but I just thought they wanted to be able to treat the Uber and Lyft drivers in the same way that they are treated everywhere else as independent contractors, because it becomes too expensive for them to take them on as employees. And I'm assuming cab drivers are independent contractors.
Cab drivers, now that's a whole different program. That's when you. Yeah. I happen to know something about cab drivers because I was one for a while. Mm-hmm. The cab driver had a medallion, had a permit, well, essentially a license.
Yeah.
So if you own the license, and I essentially rented it from you, as Tom Howe Inc. cab company, there's no doubt that I was my own guy because it was Tom Howell Cab Company, and I just rented a license from you. It wasn't your software. It wasn't your cab. It wasn't anything like that. Well, it could have been your cab. I could rent the cab from you as well, but it was definitely two different entities. Right?
Oh, yeah. They might have the same guy running both entities, but it was two different entities. But
right.
I don't see how, instead of renting the cab, just being affiliated with, you know, Uber or Lyft, suddenly makes you an employee as opposed to being an employee. I don't know enough to know why California had it on the ballot.
Well, to talk out of school, I happen to know that this Professor Russell Roach has done some consulting work on people, for people.
Uh-huh.
Now, when you do that, there are all kinds of laws regarding if they demand you have to be there at 8 o'clock and they can change your hours and do this, you're probably more of an employee. And every state has been, I use the term, fighting this battle now for quite a while, right? Mm-hmm. So, and every state is in a different spot in regards to whether they would have Russell as an employee versus not. If it's a specific task, it could be a 2-year task. It could be Russell's coming in and he's going to provide VIX calculations to somebody's new order entry system. And it's a 2-year task, and when he's done, he's done. And there's a contract that says that. Most states, that means that you are not an employee. You know, but I'm saying there's shades of gray in here, and that's why there are courts, there's why those kinds of things. I guess my bitch is, at some point, does Russell say, I don't care what the state of Illinois says. I'm going out and I'm having an election and see what the people say, whether Russell needs to be an employee or not. How do you ever get to do that, is my question.
I think California is set up where there are certain things that don't get decided by the legislature. That's why they put so many things on the ballot like that. They had 4 or 5 things similar to that. And this probably falls under that type of situation.
Well, the wording is they voted to exempt them from the state labor law.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying that to me, that's is it exactly why California is so bleeped up or what?
It might be like here where they raised the corporate tax and then started giving everybody corporate tax breaks to stay.
Well, if I have a group that has 50 consultants working for XYZ, and now do I get on the ballot? And how big do you have to be to get on this ballot? Is my question.
I don't know. I don't know how things work out there. I really don't want to know how things work out there.
Well, that's all right. We got a dash here, bud. It's Biden, eh?
It's Biden. When all is said and done, I think Pennsylvania and or Michigan flip over to him, and it's a done deal.
All right. Well, you know, I'm not saying that.
We'll talk about it in a week. We'll probably
talk about it in a week, maybe sooner. We might have to have a few people compounded through on Friday or something for 10 minutes to see who was right or who was wrong. SP Futures up 61. Yep. NASDAQ Futures up 406. Russell, thank you. Good stuff. Maddie, thank you. Back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.